Welcome to the History Reviewed channel, where we analyze the lies and deceptions of history. Here in South Africa, I've seen many videos and links to videos from a YouTube channel called Loving Life. And Loving Life is run by a guy in Australia called Scott. And Scott is clearly an ex-South African. And Scott has published all kinds of stories, including video footage of all kinds of nasty things that are going on in South Africa. Quite some time ago, I had one or two or a couple of people saying to me, why don't I try to get onto Loving Life and do an interview there? So I told them, sure, I'm game for it, but do you have any contact details for them? Can you communicate with Scott and put me in touch with him or ask him? Anyhow, nobody ever could do that, and so I was never able to really pursue it. And I myself didn't know how to get hold of Scott. But in this year, through quite a twisted series of events, to my utter amazement, I actually made contact with Scott. And the first thing that I raised with him was that South Africa is going to get a nasty hate speech law. So imagine my utter amazement when Scott invited me onto his show. Also, another thing that had happened to Scott is that, like all of us who started out on YouTube, sooner or later you get kicked off. I got kicked off for my hardcore stuff, and when I got kicked off, YouTube had sent me between 700 and 800 legal complaints over videos that I had done. But YouTube is so intolerant these days that it chases anybody off. And Scott himself, despite his big following on YouTube, was also eventually kicked off YouTube. So he created a website, and it's called Loving Life TV, and he's continuing on with his work. So this is my first ever interview with Scott of Loving Life TV. And in here we discuss the nasty, nasty hate speech law that has been prepared for South Africa and which could well become the law in the coming months or years. It just depends on how quickly this evil, evil anti-white government rams this stuff through.
Goeiedag, good day, fellow South Africans and citizens of the world.
I've been looking around for salvation. I've been looking around for the truth. All around me I see frustration, and I looked all over till I found you. I sit and listen to your stories, and you're telling me, please don't worry. Not in this world you should know, and loving life is where you should go. If you're looking for somewhere to go, if you're looking for someone to know, you're looking for someone to guide you, the loving light will guide you.
Koinant! Good evening, fellow South Africans and citizens of the world, and welcome to tonight's very, very important discussion on a subject that should be on everybody's lips, and that is your freedom of speech. Tonight I'm talking to Jan Lamprecht about the sinister new hate speech bill being introduced by the corrupt gangster ANC government in South Africa. To understand why this bill is not only unconstitutional, but is also illegal, let's listen to this short video which reflects the importance of your freedom of speech. Here we go.
Ari and I, you've spent a life dedicated to the cause of free speech. Could you tell us why, in the simplest terms, you think it's so important?
I think it's so important because freedom of speech seems to me the key to all other rights. If one can speak out about any abuse one has suffered, one always has the possibility of gaining certain relief or certain redress from any other kind of abuse. And I think people all over the world prize the ability to express themselves freely because they know that that is the way that they can protect themselves against other kinds of abuses of their rights.
You think you've worked with the Open Society Institute all over the world. Is it, in your experience, genuinely a universal aspiration?
I think it is a universal aspiration. I know that there are many governments who describe or think of freedom of speech as a Western construct, and to an extent it is. But I think it's also the case that individual persons want to be able to say what they want to say, believe what they want to believe, associate with whom they want to associate. And they see freedom of speech, even if they don't articulate it as a general concept, as something that is immensely important to them.
Okay. I don't think any of us will disagree with what he had to say. And I have no doubt that everyone watching this live stream will understand how our rights and freedoms are being trampled on in so many ways. Consider how YouTube, for example, are shutting down channels that dare speak out about the COVID vaccine tyranny. Jan Lamprecht is a controversial character as far as the mainstream media in South Africa are concerned, because he dares to speak his mind on historical issues and he does not follow the politically correct, read, censored line. With the hate speech bill currently before the South African Parliament, this is the perfect time to address just how dangerous this bill is for your human rights and how it can be misused by a corrupt government like the ANC. Please remember to register on lovinglifetv.com to be kept informed and put any questions you may have for Jan in the side chat. I'll get Jan on. Here we go. Hi, Jan.
Hi there, Scott.
Good to have you on.
It's awesome to be on your show. Thank you so much. That's a real honor.
Not a problem. I'm just waiting for your camera to kick in.
Oh, let me go check. If it's not kicked in, let me quickly check.
We did check this half an hour ago, so It should be there.
That's fine. There
it is.
It is.
Perfect. Much better. Much better. Much better. Now, Young, you've had a very interesting life because you've dared to stick your head above the parapet, so to speak. Tell me how this has worked for you. I mean, what have the mainstream media said about you as a result of you speaking your mind, which is called freedom of speech?
Oh, man, you have no idea the problems I've had because of sticking my head out. Even when I started, and let me just tell you in my background, I come originally from Rhodesia, moved to South Africa 41 years ago. My parents are originally from South Africa. But I was a quiet person in South Africa, never said a word, never got involved in politics, stayed quiet all my life until Robert Mugabe began seizing the farms of the whites, killing whites, driving them off the land, etc., in the year 2000. That's when I finally lost it. And from that moment onwards until now, I've been speaking out. And from the moment I started this stuff, I must tell you, I had all kinds of problems. And as the years have gone by, I've been under more attack than you can believe. And all because of things that I publish on my websites and things that I say. And over the years, my websites have been hacked. My websites have been hacked so many times. My websites have been torn apart as people hacked into them. I've had websites taken down, service providers have shut me down, I've lost domain names, the list goes on and on and on. I've had people write the nastiest things about me. Oh God. Even in the early days, the things that people came up with, enemy agents who come, befriend you, and then just when you're about to do something, they knife you in the back. Let me tell you, it is not fun. If you are not a weak, pathetic, spineless person, and all you're trying to do is you're just trying to say what you think, and you can prove that what you are saying is true, if you just try to tell the truth in the way that you see it and understand it and can defend it, boy, oh boy, you're going to get kicked in the head, I tell you. I've been banned off YouTube. I was on YouTube from 2015 to 2016. By the time they threw me off YouTube, I tried several tricks to stay on YouTube. But YouTube also allowed you to create 50 channels. And so when they banned my one channel, I created 10 new channels, and I tried to still work within their rules, but that didn't last long. Once they got their eye on you, they've got it in for you, you're going down. So I only managed to last about 6 months, and then they came and they shut down all 10 channels all Wow. at once. before I was kicked off YouTube, there was specific historical stuff that I was publishing about World War II. That specific stuff, they would start notifying me that there are legal complaints. YouTube has got a huge legal department. People don't know this. But YouTube is probably the most sued organization on the planet, believe it or not. And so they've got a huge legal department and they take care of all kinds of things. But even so, my stuff, because I complied with everything, complied with copyright and all that kind of stuff. But even so, by the time that I was thrown off, there were all these constant complaints coming from Europe about my World War II stuff. And do you know that by the time I was shut down, YouTube had sent me almost 800 legal complaints against my channel?
Wow. Well, look.
So that means like 800 lawyers' letters, literally.
Yeah.
So,
well, look, yeah. It's interesting you mention about Europe, because one of the most controversial, if I can put it that way, subjects is World War II and Adolf Hitler. And for anyone who wants to get evidence of who funded Adolf Hitler, there's the book. And the author is Anthony G. Sutton. This book has never, ever been referenced by any of the mainstream media. You will see that the New World Order, I'm talking about the Bushes, the Rothschilds, the Bank of International Settlements, they funded Adolf Hitler. And yet none of them have ever gone before the Nuremberg trials. But it's an excellent book. It's got all the documentation. This is how history is rewritten. But let's get back to our guests. I just wanted to have a bit of a rant about that, because when you talk about Europe, the misleading way history is presented is extraordinary.
Yes, even Napoleon said that history is lies agreed upon.
Mm. All right.
That I'm afraid is the truth. I'll just add one thing. The most lied about event in human history is World War II. Most everything you've ever heard about World War II is a lie, and I'll leave it at that.
Yeah, no, I understand why you've got to leave it at that. But okay, so now tonight, Jan, we're talking about this absolutely sinister, unconstitutional bill called the Hate Speech Bill that's been brought into the Parliament. Now, as far as I'm concerned, the bill violates the South African Constitution. Many attorneys and even legal professors have made this point clear. Do you want to talk to us about its constitutionality?
Okay. Just in a nutshell, I've gone and looked at many articles that have been published on the internet. And for people who are interested in the greater detail, you can just go to a special page on my website. The page is hate.africancrisis.info. I'll repeat that, hate.africancrisis.info. And in there, you'll see references to all these things that I'm talking about. I've found articles. I went and I did lots of research. Initially, what happened was, how I heard about this hate speech law was about back in 2017. Dr. Peter Hammond, also a guy from Rhodesia, very active in the Christian community in South Africa, also a truth teller. Dr. Peter Hammond was the first person to warn me about this thing. And he and I did a show about it in 2017. He referred to this thing as draconian. And let me tell you, that is not an overstatement at all. And then what happened is, it seems to me there was a lot of pushback, especially from Christians, because this crazy, crazy law affects virtually everything you say. And we'll return to the topic of Christians. But I then started hearing about it last year from an attorney, from an advocate, actually. And he said to me, and he was talking about me and my website, and he said to me, "Jan, when this thing comes in, you're going to be in jail soon." He said, no ways in hell will you be able to function when this thing comes in. And he used to say things like, he's read the original submission. And he said, "This is the craziest law ever thought up in the history of the world." That was the way this advocate described it. My own attorney brought my attention to it this year, and he said the same thing. He said to me, "Jan, you'll never be able to survive on the internet. They will put you in jail for sure. And this thing is nasty, nasty, nasty. And if you go and you look at this thing and you hunt around, you'll see that many, many attorneys, white attorneys from South Africa, have written on South African websites and even on international websites. They've done a study of this thing. There are proper, full legal appreciations of this thing. And these people make various, very technical legal points. They say, for example, that this bill violates parts of the Constitution, that there are other parts of the law that relate to free speech, that it also clashes with this bill has got lots and lots of problems, and it doesn't fit in with the overall view of South Africa as we've believed it to be. And they say that, and they even say that this law is a kind of a mess. This law, by the way, people were secretly conniving on this thing for 10 years. They were working for 10 years on this thing to lay the case for this thing. This thing is like making South Africa the Soviet Union and to totally shut people up for once and for all. This thing, although it's called hate speech, it's really thought control and it's censorship by intimidation and terror. And they have gone right to the heart of South African law. And they're doing the weirdest things ever seen in South African law. This thing is almost as crazy as land seizure without compensation. I'd say the only other thing that's on a par with this is seizing the land of people without paying for it by the government. These are the two craziest things that have been thought up by this rather demented, white-hating government. Bunch of communists, actually.
I can just add to that, Jan, that the Open Society Foundation, which is run by George Soros, they are behind the expropriation without compensation bill. They're also behind the bill which is now changing the gun laws so that self-defense is no longer an option. I would not be surprised if the Open Society Foundation were behind this hate speech bill, because it's the sort of thing that they would be involved in. The people don't realize in South Africa... just a second, John. People in South Africa have no idea the influence that the Open Society Foundation have on the laws that are passed in your parliament. It's quite extraordinary and very, very disturbing. Back to you, Jan.
Well, if you go to that link of mine, hate.africancrisis.info, you will see that I've actually got the PDF from the Open Society Foundation right there. Yeah. So you're dead on the money. There is their submission. Oh, these are evil bastards, I must tell you. That's to put it mildly.
No, just for the record, your link is below this video. Stuff, yeah. Jan, your link is below this video in the description, so people can just click on that.
Excellent. Now, yes, I put a whole bunch of stuff there.
Yeah. Now, the Freedom of Religion Foundation, the Institute for Race Relations, AfroForum, and even the Helen Suzman Foundation are all against this hate speech bill. There are probably many more organizations that are also against this bill, but those are the major ones. Do you want to tell us about the importance of a group like the Helen Suzman Foundation being against this hate speech bill?
I was actually very surprised that the Helen Suzman Foundation was against this thing, because she's very liberal, and by very liberal, one is almost leaning towards communism. So I was very surprised to discover that even the Helen Suzman Foundation finds this thing unacceptable. One of the most important groups that is really pounding away at this thing is the Freedom of Religion Foundation. This seems to be a bunch of Christians. They seem to have a top advocate, an Afrikaans lady, and they are aggressively fighting this thing. But I know that Peter Hammond, with his Frontline Fellowship, and probably lots of other Christian organizations are involved in this, because this thing is so crazy that, you know, if a pastor was going to preach to the people on Sunday, and the pastor says, gay people will burn in hell, you know, until the end of time, that could be a jail sentence for the pastor right there. That would be 3 years for first offense. You know, if you do it second time, it could be 5 years. This thing, I'm not sure if you can get jail sentences of up to 10 years for this thing. This thing is nasty, I'm telling you. And AfriForum is very important. AfriForum is a powerful Afrikaans organization, but it's very liberal. It's sort of linked to F.W. de Klerk, so it's linked to international money. But AfriForum is probably the wealthiest of all the white organizations in South Africa. AfriForum is totally opposed to this thing. I suspect that you'll probably find every single Christian organization in the country is against it. And the only reason this thing isn't law already is because I think the Christians fought this thing intensely last time around, back in 2017. It looks like the Christians, between the Christians and even the soft, weak Democratic Alliance in Parliament, and Freedom Front and all those, and AfriForum, I think between them all, they managed to block this thing to such a degree that it sort of ground to a halt. And the government sort of got bogged down in this thing. But another thing I must warn you about is that this current president, Ramaphosa, he's an evil bastard, put it mildly. This guy, he comes across as a capitalist billionaire, good guy, but the reality is he may be the worst communist of the lot. Long time ago when I did my book, Government by Deception, which was my original warning to the whites of South Africa, this was the first thing I ever wrote as a warning to the whites of South Africa, that we are going to end up like Zimbabwe. And in there, I spent some time going to military offices, and I met General Tini Groenewald, who was in charge of military intelligence in South Africa. Tini Groenewald, I met him face-to-face in his house in Pretoria, and I told him about my book, and I asked him for information. He gave me lots of information, but then he volunteered something. He told me something. He said to me that there's one guy he wants to warn me about. And his words to me were, Cyril Ramaphosa is the second most popular black in South Africa. The only black more popular than him is Nelson Mandela. And his words were, if Cyril Ramaphosa becomes the president of South Africa, the whites are finished. Those were the words out of the mouth of that general. And later on, I heard from Peter Hammond and others that Tini Groenewald told this to everybody he met. He warned them, the guy who's going to take the whites down is Ramaphosa. Forget about Zuma. Forget about Mbeki, though I hate Mbeki. Mbeki was bad news. He helped Mugabe to get away with the land seizures in Zimbabwe. But forget Zuma. This Ramaphosa guy, he's the worst news of the lot. And look at how under Ramaphosa we've had land seizure without compensation, finally getting in. And now look at what's coming to life. This freaking nasty hate speech law. Ramaphosa is bad news for the whites. But you'll see that the lying liberal mass media are just constantly telling you how wonderful Ramaphosa is, just like they did with Mbeki. But those guys, they're even worse than Zuma, man. They're not to be toyed with.
Well, I just want to pick up on a couple of things you said. First off, Dr. Peter Hammond is a good friend of this channel. We have him on quite regularly on live streams, and an incredibly switched on man, incredibly switched on. He's actually one of our channel heroes, Peter Hammond. Top guy. Huge amount of respect for him. And the other thing I'd like to just mention here, Jan, is how the mainstream media report on people who've been charged, for example, under crimen injuria with the South African Human Rights Commission, where someone uses the K word or something like that, or allegedly uses the K word. This is before this hate speech bill even comes out. And it gives you a foretaste of what's coming once this bill is out. Because you take Eben Etzebeth, that Springbok rugby player, just after they won the World Cup last year. He was called before the South African Human Rights Commission because a group of people complained that he had used a word which the colored community there found offensive. And that was all over the newspapers. It was all over the television. It was everywhere. But what suddenly disappeared into a big hole and no one ever spoke about was that the Springbok Rugby Board did a proper investigation into the complaint, gave the results to the South African Human Rights Commission, who said, there's absolutely no case to answer here. It's all bullshit. And the mainstream media in South Africa didn't say diddly squat about it after making such a noise when the allegations had been made. This gives you a taste of what's coming if you get charged under this hate speech bill. This is how corrupt, how fake the mainstream media are. There should be a balance. If they're going to go after someone when the allegation is made, when he's found not guilty, they should basically spread that same word around the place. But a lot of people in South Africa still think that Ibn Etzebeth is still facing these charges. He's not. He was cleared a year ago. It's just absolutely disgusting the way the mainstream media report. And you couple that on to this hate speech bill, and you've got trouble with a capital T. Now, let's talk about journalists. Journalists and attorneys have pointed out that this bill will take petty insults and turn them into jailable crimes where a first-time offender could do 3 years jail time. Do you want to talk on that?
Yes. When this thing initially was published, there were a couple of journalists here and there, a few websites, where they actually did do a little bit of digging into this thing. And they pointed out that very simple things that you might say in day-to-day life, because you must understand this thing is about communication and it affects any form of communication. So whether you are talking to somebody at your work, whether you're talking to somebody over the phone, it's not just about the social media. It's about anything you communicate to anybody in any way. So whether you say it to their face or you write it in an email or you put a post on a website or a WhatsApp group, any form of communication, whether it's public or private, can be turned against you. My own attorney said to me that if I'm on the phone and I'm talking to somebody, and somebody else is just walking by me or sitting near me and they hear our conversation, that person who's sitting next to you, who's not even part of the conversation, if they deem that what you've just said is hate speech, they can go to the police and lay charges against you. And the police can come and seize your phone and pull out all the details, etc. So this thing opens up such a nightmare of communications, and the attorneys have told me that when this thing becomes law, you'll have to watch anything you say and anything you pass on. And it's not just what you say. Suppose somebody sends you a meme or a picture or a video or a text message that comes from somebody else, and you pass it on, and one of the people who receives it or sees it deems that that is hate speech, then if they don't know the source, they can still charge you for passing on something that somebody else created. The attorneys have told me that when this thing becomes law, they will be shutting down their social media, they'll be getting off the phones, they won't be doing a thing, because anything will be... people will be able to come after you with almost anything.
Yeah. And look, carry on.
And, you know, if you look at the history of the stuff that they've already been trying to jail whites for, they've been making tremendous efforts in recent years to start jailing white people. This started, the first person that they did big time, where the mass media went crazy. And I must tell you that I have no respect whatsoever for journalists. I have lost all respect for journalists in total. These people are... words cannot describe the contempt I feel for journalists. Nobody should even give an interview to journalists. You should never even speak to these people. They will destroy you. And like you say, they have no concern for the truth or the facts or following up on things or nothing. The first person that they tried to put in jail was a white woman. She was a pensioner, in fact, and her name was Penny Sparrow. And all she did was, and this is now in the past with the crime of crimen injuria.
Yeah.
Let me just explain. There are a couple of insult laws that already exist. So there are already laws that you can put people in jail over the things that they say. So it's not like you need a law because you don't have a law. You've already got a law. The law that already exists is a thing called crimen injuria. It's an insult law. So if you say something to somebody and that is regarded and it results in an insult, that person can right now already go to the police and lay charges against you and say, listen, this person insulted me for this and this and this and so on. So crimen injuria is already there. They are already using it, and they have already begun putting in jail over crimen injuria. But they weren't putting people in jail for crimen injuria until about 2018 or so. So crimen injuria has existed in all the history of South Africa, but now they're trying to throw people in jail for things that they say. So Penny Sparrow was the first one. All that she did was she posted something on Facebook and she only posted it to her personal friends. So she posted a thing and she said, oh, these blacks are like little monkeys. Then somebody took a screenshot of that, posted it on Facebook, and it went viral. Mass media grabbed hold of it, turned that into a huge shitstorm, and then they went after this lady, and they went after her to get her jailed. I think she got a jail sentence. It may have been suspended or whatever. But then the next one, the one that they did with crimen injuria, is a lady called Vicky Momberg. Vicky Momberg was an Afrikaans estate agent. She was in a car accident, I think. And after the car accident, she was very worked up. So she's got adrenaline rush and adrenaline pumping. And now the police and the other services are slow to react. So she goes a bit crazy in her adrenaline rush, and she starts using the K word, which is the South African version of the American N word. So all she does is she uses the K word on her phone, okay? And they take just her using the K word, 42 times apparently, they turn it into a crimen injuria thing. And she gets a 2-year jail sentence or a 2.5-year jail sentence in 2018. The first person in South Africa to get a jail sentence for crimen injuria. But like I say, crimen injuria has always existed. And there's another old law that has been used many times. Also, it's been mainly used for political purposes. Also, if you just want to shut somebody up, it's a law called criminal defamation. Criminal defamation is also an existing law that they can put you away with, okay? So it's not like there aren't laws already. Plus, they also created a law called the Equality Act. The Equality Act even has an entire court system devoted to it. Also, and that's also a law that mainly goes after whites. So you've got the Equality Act, you've got crimen injuria, you've got criminal defamation. Why the hell do you need another law? And you know, that'll just give you some idea of the fact that this hate speech bill that they're proposing. This thing is, it's just more stuff that they're inventing, and there's no need for it. And there are even journalists, even attorneys have pointed out that all surveys of race relations in South Africa have shown that there is no racial problem to be concerned with. They have asked black people, for example, they've asked blacks, you know, how are race relations going? Are you feeling it's getting worse or not? And blacks are saying it's getting better, that there isn't a racial problem. So you know, this hate speech bill that's come up, this is something that other people have dreamed up because they want censorship. And that's really what this thing is about. There's no actual justification for it. And if I may just add something else, this hate crime bill has got very bizarre things in it. What they've done is in the original Constitution of South Africa and the Bill of Rights, they have got protections for certain things. They've got protections for, I think it's minorities, ethnicity, race, religion, sex. They got a couple of protections like that, things that are supposed to be protected. But in this particular bill, they've got a long list. It's almost 20 items long. Let me just read off the list to you, because this is a bizarre list. So here are the things which, if you say anything about these things, this could get you a jail sentence. So first one is age, albinism, birth. I'm not sure what they mean by birth, whether it's where you are born, color, culture, disability, ethnic or social origin, gender or gender identity. And when I see gender identity, I'm already seeing transgender. That's probably what they mean. HIV status, language, nationality, migrant, refugee status, occupation or trade. Occupation or trade. People could do a jail time for criticizing an occupation or a trade, or talking about somebody's age. And it goes on, race, religion, sex. And there's quite a lot on sex. It says sex, which includes intersex or sexual orientation. So any one of those topics, if you come up and you do what they call hate speech, and what is hate? Let me just talk a bit about hate. The legal definition of hate is anything that results in harm. So the obvious example of hate would be, let's go and kill those people. Okay, that would be a blatant version of it. But when you get to court, then the whole topic becomes much more subtle. Hate can start being defined as many other things. If you say that person is not suitable for a job, because you start having hate and you start having harm. And once you start moving into those territories, you can start doing all kinds of soft, weird things. You can say, well, you know, they didn't say kill, but they did say that I don't deserve a job because I'm a this and so on, and it's going to cause harm to me, etc. So they can start playing on those words. And then it just depends on the situation and the court. And, you know, they could easily start turning things into hate that aren't really hate. Okay.
Yeah.
And that's another thing about this topic, which we'll discuss more about the harm aspect.
Okay. I just want to respond to a few things that you said there. And probably the thing that I find most disturbing about the current laws that are there in South Africa, in particular crimen and juria, is that with farm attacks, more often than not, the perpetrators who come on the farm and attack the farmer will say, well, he used the K word. So it's like their get out of jail free card. And what happens as soon as they make that allegation to the police, that becomes the news, not the horrific farm attack that takes place. This is how corrupt the mainstream media are. With regards to Vicky Momberg, I actually had her on a live stream about 18 months ago or about a year ago. And we went through the whole thing that happened that day. And basically what happened was she was mugged. She didn't have a car accident. She was mugged. She tried to phone the police for hours. She phoned them about 50 times. They never responded. She was completely out of her tree when they eventually arrived. And because she was in such an emotional state, that's when she used the K word, I think 48 times. And, you know, she was completely out of it. And as a result, she was named and shamed by the mainstream media. She lost her job as a real estate agent. She's pretty well unemployable now because her name is Vicky Momberg. You know, it is quite disgusting the impact that can have in a situation like that. And the real perpetrators on that day were the police, who did not respond to her calls. And it literally took hours for them to come there. And with regards to this race issue, look what happened in July in Durban when, you know, these people came in and they looted everything. And all the media talked about was Phoenix, the Indians in Phoenix who racially attacked the Africans. And they were making it a racial issue. This is what the media love doing because it makes clickbait. As soon as you bring the race issue in, everybody says, ah, let me go and have a look. If they'd said the people of Phoenix were just defending themselves against what they saw as perpetrators and people who were going to attack their families, that would not have been newsworthy. So they had to bring in the race issue. I think if there's going to be a hate bill, the media, if they misrepresent the facts, should be taken to court for misrepresenting the facts. That should be part of the hate bill, to bring them back into line. But I don't see that happening. And just one final thing regarding all these transsexual and all these different things you can't talk about. You watch. Soon you won't be able to talk about transhuman. Because where we're going in the world today is you're going to have people who will be half robot, half human. And, you know, if you talk about a transhuman as someone who's a bit weird, that will also be action in the courts. The whole world has gone crazy. Look, I want to just continue on. Okay, now, the bill will impact the freedom of religion, including Christianity. Certain things in the Bible, if promoted, will be regarded as hate speech. There are many possible examples, but one will suffice. Suppose you say that gays will go to hell. That could be hate speech. Now, I understand that in California, which is a very liberal state in the United States, they have actually banned the Bible. They have banned the Bible because it has hate speech over that very point that you've raised. Do you want to just talk on the subject?
Yes. And if I may just also add in on something that you mentioned, that K word, that get out of jail free card. Hmm. I have spoken to a number of attorneys, and attorneys have told me that blacks abuse that claim all the time. That if you catch a black who's a thief or a black was involved in a strike and he did some damage or whatever, anything, that the blacks always come along, almost always, and they start throwing in, oh yes, but you know the white guy used the K word. And they tell me this stuff is abused in courts like you cannot believe,
yeah.
Even in places where it has no place. The blacks know this is just like you say, get out of jail free. The courts are so rigged and so abused. And when it comes to the mass media, I will tell you, the mass media being the whores that they are, truly, these people, that's what they are. All they care about is how many black people come to read their stupid websites, and they will say anything. They don't care about anything. In fact, I'll tell you something. A couple of years ago, the Star newspaper in Johannesburg, the Star newspaper probably about 6 or 7 years ago, they went through a phase where their front page headlines was only about white males who were committing crimes. That was the only thing. They were doing just hit jobs on white males.
Mm.
And you know, the mass media, I just don't have enough words of contempt. With regard to Christianity, there are so many issues in Christianity where Christianity stands firm on certain topics like gays, etc. And if a pastor goes and just preaches stuff out of the Bible. I remember being told that in the very first attempt to pass this disgusting piece of legislation, that it was so bad that they reckoned before any pastor in South Africa gives a sermon, he would literally have to have his sermon checked to see if he's not going to do hate speech. But what they've kind of done so far is they've started putting in exceptions, but the exceptions are not full exceptions, and it will affect somebody like you and me, for example. So they've started putting in some kind of exception that if you are a professor at a university, then you can talk about this topic. If you are a professional preacher, then you can. But in South Africa, you get lots of people who preach, white people who preach, and they're not professionals. And they just preach because it's their belief and that's how they feel. And so the professional preacher might be protected, but not the other guy. And so what happens to a guy like myself? I'm not a formal journalist, but I am doing some journalism, some research. I'm not accredited by a university. I'm not an official journalist. So if I have an opinion, that opinion could become a problem. And yeah, so with regard to the Bible, the Bible is open to tons of things that they can nail you on. And so even just saying, you know, gay people will burn in hell or something like that, you know, they can come and say, oh, that's hate speech and blah, 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 and jail time for you. Bang. This is probably the part of the hate speech law that's really irritating people is the many Christians in South Africa. And But it's nuts because another thing, for example, like I do history, and as I was saying to my attorney, if you go and you read history, what is history about? History is about groups, and these groups are busy talking about each other. So the Romans will write about the Greeks will write about the Romans, they'll talk about the Persians, etc. They'll talk about everybody, and they'll draw conclusions that are racist and that are not politically correct. And what if you start agreeing with them? What if you start agreeing with, oh, you know, those things the Romans said, or that stuff that Napoleon said or Hitler said, that he's talking the truth? Now suddenly you'll find that can be hate speech.
That's crazy. I mean, history is history. You can't play with history, but unfortunately it does get played with all the time. I just want to raise a point here, and that is that often you hear that word being used, Malungu, which is a very derogatory term aimed at the white people and used by the blacks, but it is not seen as crimen injuria. It is, for some reason, you can say the most awful things if you're a black person against a white person, and the South African Human Rights Commission would just say, that's creative speech, like they did with Julius Malema when he sang, kill the Boer, kill the farmer. They'd said, no, we're not going to charge him because he was just being creative in his use of speech. But if a white person uses a K word against a black person, it's instant jail. I mean, there is a complete double standard there, isn't there?
Totally, totally. I can add to this. You know, if there's a guy who should have been in jail already, it's Julius Malema. Yeah. You know, Julius Malema, years ago when he started, Julius Malema at a point was going on to the SABC, South African Broadcasting Corporation. He was on the SABC. All the major newspapers and radio were carrying his words. Julius Malema in the beginning was openly going on the air telling all black people to kill white people. He said this. It's recorded. It was done. The entire nation heard it, okay? And by the way, when Julius Malema did all these things, never at any time did any black politician or president of South Africa ever come and publicly attack Julius Malema. Never. No politician, not even the presidents of South Africa, Africa themselves, have jumped onto TV and said, oh, you mustn't listen to that Malema, he's engaging in hatred, etc. Never. They all sit there in silence and they leave Malema to do hate speech and nothing ever happens to him. But there have been many whites and many white organizations who've tried to, who've gone and laid charges against Malema. Lots of whites have, and lots of organizations have, and I'm not sure if it's AfriForum or one of them that they eventually cornered Malema and got him into the high court and everything. They tried everything. I think they may have gone even to the constitutional court.
Yeah.
And Malema gets off the hook. So how is that possible? There's another black guy. I forget his name. He's from a thing called Blacks blacks first or black land first. He said that blacks must kill all the whites,
Nixitama.
Including their, it could be, including their children and their cats and dogs. And then there's President Zuma. President Zuma used to do a thing called he'd sing a song, and the song would be Mshini Wami.
Yeah.
And Mshini Wami meant get me my machine gun. Okay. But the blacks would say, no, you haven't got it right. It's get me my machine, not my machine gun. But I actually, a long time ago on my African Crisis website, I actually had a photo. I published a photo where Zuma was singing at one of his rallies. He was singing his Mshini Wami thing. And there was one of his black supporters with a cardboard cutout of an AK-47. Holding it up to the audience. So he's singing about machine gunning the whites to death. Yeah. Did Zuma do jail time? Did Zuma get charged with criminal injuria? No. Equality Court didn't touch on it. And this is where, and I'll explain why this is, because, and you'll see, this particular law is even worse, because what happens here is that they start bringing, this law is rigged against whites. And let me explain how the rigging occurs. This law is rigged even more against whites than the existing laws. Okay. The existing laws, they already start undermining it and saying, no, like you say, a creative speech. Ah, he's just playing a game. He's not really serious, etc. Yet whatever a white man says, that apparently is serious.
Yeah.
But in this particular law, they've got a very weird aspect that makes it totally rigged against whites. And it works like this, that the person charged with the hate speech crime, when it comes to assessing guilt and levels of guilt, etc., they have to include the person's racial and cultural history. And so it turns out that the racial and cultural history of a white is going to be a history of superiority, that the white is superior and the black is inferior. And then in their legal mumbo jumbo, what they then say is that because the white has been superior and he insults the black man who's been inferior, his words are more hurtful.
Yeah.
And then they just turn it around for the black guy and they say, oh, but he's been in an inferior position, it doesn't mean as much, blah, blah, blah. And then of course there's other aspects to laws, and that is that laws involve a certain amount of discretionary actions by the people in the court system. So remember, this is going to be a crime. So in order to charge somebody, you don't need an attorney. You're just going to walk into the nearest police station and you're going to lay your charge. So first of all, it's not going to cost you money. So that means anybody can start charging you and they don't need money. And any black person can come and charge any white person. But now you've got the police. So the police are the first line of defense. And the police could say, look, they can downplay your thing. And they can say, you know, we don't really think we should be doing this thing. Your next level of people that you're going to deal with are the clerks of the court. So you've got all this discretionary stuff in the court system that's over and above the law. And the prejudices of these blacks can work against you. It can and will work against you. And that is also how there's a filtering mechanism whereby the actions of a white will be pushed straight through and it'll go straight to trial, but the actions of a black will be watered down, worked out of the system, etc., etc., and they'll say, no, it's not that important. They use even things like saying, it's our culture. I've never heard whites turning around and saying, but we have a culture too. And why is our culture never taken into looked at seriously? You know, these are the other things that sit around these crimes. And that's why if you go and look at crimen injuria on paper, crimen injuria applies to everybody. This bill will apply to everybody. But the reality of how it's implemented in those courts, you can see from the past that the people that are going to be whacked are going to be the whites. The equality stuff was already used against the whites, yeah, flat out. And this is going to be even worse. This just opens up doors like you can't believe.
Yeah, no, look, I totally agree with you. And I'm pleased you raised the issue of the cost, because what people have to understand here is that if someone lays a charge against you, you have to get a lawyer to defend yourself. But the person who laid the charge pays nothing. The police actually take on the case. So it's a way of actually draining you of money as well. I just want to move on to the bill favors sexual deviance and lays a ground for sexual deviancy to be the norm, or even have protected status compared to normal heterosexual people. So what we're actually saying here, Jan, is that the traditional normal lifestyle somehow is not protected, but for the deviants, the people who do weird things, they are protected, and they can be, yes, victims of hate speech. But a normal family basically cannot be a victim of hate speech because they're a normal family. That makes no sense to me at all, but that's basically what it says, isn't it?
Well, let me just explain how that will work, because it doesn't say that legally in the law, but let me explain in practice why that would be the case. And let's look at it, for example, from the point of view of all kinds of non-heterosexual people, for example. The reason that I point that out that way is, let's say somebody does sexual stuff that is so outrageous that people get angry about it. So let's say you find somebody who engages in bestiality, for example, yeah, and you say, That is sick. That is demented. We need to stop those people, even if we have to use force, you know. And you're outraged. So you're outraged, and you say that thing has got to stop, and we got to stop it by whatever means. Let's say pedophilia. Somebody who's having sex with children, okay, abusing children, and parents and adults are saying that is sick, okay. Now, that kind of thing and that kind of reaction, it's the reaction. You go out there, you say, this is sick. This is against the Bible. This is against our morals. We must stop this dead in its tracks. We cannot, yeah, allow, let's say, a 9-year-old, you know, this thing to happen. So that kind of reaction is now going to result in you being charged with a hate crime because of your reaction. Now, heterosexuals, it's unlikely that anybody is going to go and say heterosexuals need to be stopped dead in their tracks because it's the norm. So nobody is going to bother with heterosexuals, but the deviants, all the weirdos, all the people who are sexual misfits. And like, for example, recently in America, people have been pointing out that schools are teaching homosexuality as the norm, yeah, okay, transgender children are introduced to transgender. So all those kinds of things are actually going to be protected by this thing, especially. And you see you've also got a kind of a speech. There was a very interesting thing that happened in Britain a couple of months ago. There was a judgment in Britain which amazed me, a judgment to do with free speech, where some very high-level judges actually allowed what you could call hate speech. And they turned around and they defended it like this. They said that there is some kinds of free speech that isn't worth having if you can't, like, speak your mind properly. And they actually allowed something through that would have otherwise been hate speech. They sort of said, you know, if every aspect of free speech is taken away, eventually you've got a speech that is meaningless. So to bring it back to this thing, it stops you from communicating to people and saying to people, you know what, that sexual deviant behavior there, that's wrong for society, and yeah. We need to counter that. So now it takes that away from you. So you end up with a free speech where you either can't say much or you're forced to say something good. And so then what is free speech? If you can't add some energy to it, to say to people, you know, people are saying, well, people in this world are a bunch of sheeple. Well, you need somebody to say to them, listen, we got to take care of that, and that's a threat to our survival over there, etc. And if you can't talk like that, and you can't get people to gather together and to deal with certain problems, then, you know, what are you going to do? You're going to spend all your time saying how good gay people are and how good transsexuals are, etc. So it takes away the power of free speech. The real power of free speech is taken away, and you've got to just accept all kinds of weirdness.
Yeah. I just want to address something that Marius said. By the way, Marius, he's a guy in Ladysmith, will be in contact with you.
Okay.
Now, Marius said, and I'm just going to put this in my words, okay? I am a kaffir, okay? And let me just repeat that. I am a kaffir. Because the word kafir comes from the Quran, and they call everybody who is not believing in their Allah a kafir. So that's the real meaning of the word kafir. Okay, so let's just get that clear. Now, when I was a kid growing up in East Africa, the word that we often used was gay. You know, if I'm feeling gay, I'm feeling happy. You can't use that word now, because if I say I'm feeling gay, people think, oh, he's a homosexual. You know, this is how our English language is being totally distorted and then abused in the courts. And I brought the K word up just to clarify the fact that the meaning is completely off center. Now, let's just get back to the points we have here. And let's talk about the victim impact statement, which is a bizarre aspect of this bill, which is based on subjective claims that are unprovable, yet these will have a massive impact on the actual punishment that is given out. So if the victim claims to have been massively harmed mentally, then your jail time will be increased accordingly. Do you want to speak to us about that?
Okay. So this law has got something that we've never seen before. My attorney said to me that when he studied this law, that this is the first time ever in his life that he's seen this thing called a victim impact statement. And what the victim impact statement does, and remember another thing, is that the legal system and the law, and in my discussions with attorneys, they've made a number of points. They've said to me, for example, that the tradition in Western law, South African law, etc., the tradition has been that you can say what the hell you want, but ultimately, the law only nails you for what you do. That's how it's worked for thousands of years, actually. Okay, so you can say what you want, but it's what you do that matters. You can say, I want to shoot those people. I want to shoot those people. But if you don't do anything about it, nothing happens. And you can, it's when you've gone and you have tried to shoot those people, now the cops are going to come after you. Okay. So that's how the law has always worked. And the law has based itself on actions. It's based itself on actions. And it's also tried as much as possible to base it on objective reality. Okay. Objective reality, provable things that we can prove that is not an opinion of somebody. It's not a subjective opinion. So the law and the police system and the legal system, they try to work it in such a way, it's almost like science, you know, where science is about reproducible experiments. That if I do an experiment and I get this result and I tell you about it, you do the experiment, you'll get the same result. So we're trying to get to something that's objective, that everybody can see and test and prove, okay? But in this particular law, they and in all hate speech stuff, they move away from that and they move into a subjective realm. And in the subjective realm, then there is no longer that objectivity. You end up with a person who wasn't physically harmed. The person, so it's not like you can say, oh, you got a stab wound, okay? No, you're not harmed at all, okay? But you say, oh, I suffered so much. I couldn't sleep. I've stopped working. I'm too afraid to go out. They insulted me and they broke my ego and so forth. And so it all becomes what happens in your head, okay? So the only person who knows what happens in your head is you. Nobody else knows and nobody else can prove it. And you can say, oh, I was so harmed because something happened to me and I feel so bad. And that's really what this victim impact statement is. So the victim impact statement is, oh, I was harmed, but I wasn't physically harmed. I was harmed here in my head, okay? And then it becomes a case of, you now go, let's say, to a psychologist and you complain and moan and you cry some tears, yeah. And the psychologist writes and says, oh, yes, this person was so harmed. And so now it's subjective and you can bring in anything you want. You can say, if you're a white person, you could say, oh, I was harmed because you said something about Jesus. But a black person could say, I was harmed because you spoke about ghosts. And and witchcraft affects me. So it becomes all these weird things that you have no proof and evidence of. And the way that this law is going to work is that when you are now found guilty and they're now looking at you know, should you be fined or should you get jail time, they're going to look at that stupid victim impact statement that's totally subjective, that could have been written by somebody who's malicious, somebody who's had it in for you, somebody who's been hunting you down and has been waiting for a chance to get you in court. And then they take that victim impact statement and they say, oh, this person suffered so much harm, 5 years jail time for you. And there you go. And yeah. And that person, there's nothing to show. And if I may just add another thing that pertains to all of these legal things. A legal concept that's very important in the law, and this concept breaks down in South Africa in this multiracial society, okay, is a concept called the reasonable person. In the law, there's the concept of a reasonable person, and this is all legal systems in the West have got this. So a reasonable person, they put the reasonable person test into this law and lots of other laws. But the problem with that is that in South Africa, the reasonable person, who's the reasonable person? It's got to be the average person. Who's the average person? It's going to be a black person. So all these kinds of laws are going to be twisted because they apply the reasonable person test. So if this is a black versus white hate charge, then the white is going to be judged according to the reasonable actions of a black. And so that starts changing the whole way these laws are applied. If, of course, this were a rare case of white on white, it would be simpler. But at the moment this goes cross-racial, this becomes bizarre.
Yeah.
So
well, the reasonable I just want to add a couple of comments in. The first one is that you just have to go no further than the critical race theory that they're now bringing into the school system, which is completely a racist concept. Now, just getting back to your point about how the law will be abused, I go no further than the Coffin case of those two young guys who were put behind bars for 16 years over something they never did. Now, the lady I spoke to on the live stream just a few months ago from Patriots for Minorities actually represented those two young guys. And she was actually put in a cell for her own safety during that trial because there was such a noise going out with the economic freedom fighters outside while this case was being heard. And the police prosecutor, who refused to accept evidence from the lawyers who were defending the two white guys, but accepted fabricated evidence from the people who were claiming that they had actually murdered this young black fella, he was actually found in a high court to have lied. AfroForum took this case to the high court, and they looked at the evidence. They said, this is bullshit. Let the two guys out. But the judge and the prosecutor were that biased against two young white farmers that they put them behind bars for all. They were behind bars for a couple of years. The concerning thing now is that the same police prosecutor is now hearing the case against four white farmers in Piet Retief. You remember that case where the two brothers, two African brothers came in and they had a bit of a fight. One worked for the farmers. One of them was shot dead. Now they're claiming the four whites murdered the African guy. That's a case right now happening at Piet Retief, and you've got the same public prosecutor who basically distorted the case against the two guys, coffin guys, now on the side of the government hearing, well, being involved in that case. That the whole thing is so slanted against the white population, it's absolutely ridiculous. Yeah, go ahead.
Well, I can add to this. The two guys you're talking about, that is the coffin case.
Yes.
Right, there's another case. There was a case in Kulini in 2017. At the same time, Julius Malema was stirring up racial war in Kulini in 2017. And he tried many things. And I even went to Kulini and to Mafeking, and I saw the damage the blacks did. I've got lots of photos that I haven't even put up from that.
Right.
But Julius Malema was basically trying to stir up racial clashes, and they were trying to even burn down the houses of whites. Now, at that time, there was another incident that took place. There were two white guys who were farm managers for a farmer, and they had sunflower fields. And they were catching blacks who were coming in and stealing their crops and damaging their crops. So these two young white guys caught a black guy the one day, and they put him on the back of the bucky, the pickup truck, put him on the back of the bucky, and they drove off to Kulini to go and lay charges against him. And as they were approaching Kulini, there was a place where there was a stop. And as they slowed down, this guy jumped off the vehicle while the vehicle was moving, and he broke his neck. And immediately, the media and the EFF and the blacks came and said that the whites had killed him. Okay, so I knew somebody who was very close on this, and they said that they immediately took the guy, the ambulance took him off to the hospital, and they did a post-mortem immediately. And the post-mortem showed that the black guy suffered no injuries whatsoever. He wasn't beaten. He wasn't manhandled. He'd broken his neck from jumping off the vehicle.
Yeah.
But instead, with the EFF, with Julius Malema's EFF and all of them there, they were stirring up lots of trouble, and the mass media was pumping the stuff out. And so they also, those two white guys, were charged with murder, and they lost the case, all because of the EFF and all the threats outside the court right there, right then. Then that also was fought, and people had to appeal it in the high court, and those guys also finally got out.
Yeah.
Charged with murder. Mass media said it was murder, but it wasn't murder. And those guys weren't given a fair trial.
Importantly, Jan, those cases were not subjective. This hate speech law is subjective. So you can imagine how much worse it's going to be for the minority groups, and in particular the white people. Now, I just want to move on. The Equality Act has already been abused. The bill is open to much wider and much more far-ranging abuse. It will open the floodgates and will fill the courts, which are already overloaded with nebulous claims, won't it?
Yes, every attorney that I've spoken to has said, boy, oh boy, wait until this hate speech law is enacted. You're going to see court cases like you've never seen in your life. They've all said to me, the courts will be flooded. And as it is, the courts are already overloaded and the courts already can't handle the cases that exist. They can't even handle proper crimes. Even proper crimes are constantly delayed in the courts, etc. So this thing is so wide and so nebulous. The Equality Act, I think some of the legal fights over the Equality Act have helped to trim it a little bit, and it's not as bad as it was. But this thing is going to be way off the charts. It's going to make the Equality Act look like nothing. Yeah. They reckon, the attorneys have told me, and this thing can be abused in every way, not just racially. This thing can be abused by ex-wives, ex-lovers, you know. Yeah. People can go to town. And the attorneys have said to me, man, you don't know how creative people are and the kinds of things people will come up with. This thing will be a nightmare. So why do we even need this thing in a court system that is already pathetic and poor? And another thing that attorneys have told me is they've said to me that, they're driving the whites out of the legal system. And so as a result of that, the lower quality of the magistrates, etc., the courts are starting to produce weird results.
Yeah. There's no consistency.
Somebody even pointed out to me, one advocate even pointed out, yes, and one advocate even pointed out that there's one case where he can say that a high-level judge has already gone and, you know, been bribed or something and done something.
Yeah.
So they're saying, and in the lower courts, I've given the example of the chickens who were sentenced to death for witchcraft. That's just one. I actually want to... I'll tell you the story. This is a South African court, and this is in recent times. Okay, I thought it was the craziest stuff I've heard, and it was just one example that was given. I still want to talk to people. I
chicken has been
laughing at this absolute garbage.
This is a head-banging moment. I'm sorry.
That's excellent. I thought it was the most ridiculous.
That is crazy. Yeah, please tell us the story. I love to hear that.
So I was talking to my attorney, and my attorney said to me that this happened in a court in South Africa in recent times in the north of South Africa. He said, because we were discussing how bad are the courts and the fact that the court results, what the magistrates are doing, the magistrates are starting to deviate from the law because they're inexperienced and they've got all these weird things, okay? And so then he brought out this chicken case because I love this thing. I think it's totally freaking nuts, okay? And it should show you when you bring Western civilization and you mix it with Africa, you can get bizarre outcomes. Okay, so of course the other thing about the chickens is that South Africa's against the death penalty. Okay, remember we don't have the death penalty. We don't have the death penalty.
So you can't commit chickens to death.
Well, no, you can kill chickens, but you can't kill humans, okay? So I mean, there's something for you. You know, so South Africa, we don't have the death penalty. You can be a serial killer and you won't get the death penalty. There was one serial killer who did something like, I can't remember how many women he raped and killed. There's like a whole bunch of them, like I think more than a dozen. He raped and killed them. Then he committed a bunch of other crimes and a bunch of other crimes. In total, he committed like about 60 different crimes, okay? So he was a serial killer, serial rapist, serial criminal. And they just put him in jail, and they just give him, and they run all these sentences concurrently, and he's off the hook. And, you know, there was a time previously where a criminal, they've changed it a bit for, they've changed it and made it a bit more reasonable now. But there was a time, in the time of Mbeki, there was a time where a serial killer could be out on the streets within 10 years.
Wow.
This is how it used to be about 15 years ago. That happened under wonderful Thabo Mbeki, a guy that the mass media couldn't stop loving. Yeah. Okay, but anyway, now it's a little bit harder. But anyway, so, you know, South Africa can't execute people for murder or serial killing, and they, you know, the government doesn't even recognize the existence of farm murders. But anyway, so here's this court in a rural area, and it turns out in this court that they start investigating something, and as they are going through their processes, eventually this stuff has to do with witchcraft. And I kind of like witchcraft. I remember witchcraft as a kid. Mm. As a kid in Rhodesia, I learned about witchcraft. Blacks were telling me about witchcraft. Blacks who worked for us told me, you know, witchcraft, you can get, you know, somebody puts a spell on you. I walked down that path. The guy who was our, quotes, kitchen boy, his name was Elliot. Elliot came to me one day with a glass bottle, and he said, "You see this? This has got a magic potion in here." and I was walking. I walked down the path, and I got this pain in my leg, and I dug, and I found this thing. This is witchcraft. And I looked at it, and it was like water with a bunch of leaves and a couple of sticks and so forth. You know, so. So anyway, so blacks are into witchcraft big time. And then Elliot told me that he went to a witch doctor because he thinks he knows who's putting spells on him. And he's going to get
spell
his
on witch
doctor. Yes, he's going to get his witch doctor to put a spell on the other guy's witch doctor. And they're going to sort this out, okay? So this is Africa, okay? So anyway, in this court, so blacks take this seriously. I'm in computers, okay? I worked with a black guy who went to university. I'm not kidding you, a black guy who went and studied, got a BCom in university, and one day we had a discussion, and he told me how real witchcraft is. He told me how real it is. He said to me, you take an axe, and you go to a lake or a river, and you chop the water with an axe, and if you do that, that's powerful magic. And this guy's got a BCom. He's been in university, okay? And he's convincing you that witchcraft is real. So these blacks, they believe even this witchcraft mumbo-jumbo stuff. Yeah. That's why they cut off body parts and trade in body parts. Mm. Anyway, so they were doing this case, and it turned out through the evidence and what have you that there was witchcraft at work, and then they traced it to the chickens. And they found that the chickens were doing the witchcraft, okay? And so the magistrate found that the chickens had committed witchcraft, and the magistrate sentenced the chickens to death. So I wish somebody would tell the SPCA about this, because I'm sure, you know, we really got to get onto this thing. You know, could chickens and pigs and other things be sentenced to death for witchcraft? Well, so apparently they were sentenced to death and they were executed.
That's crazy. Now, I've got to talk to you about Malema, because this guy is a nasty bit of work. You know, he is in charge of the appointment of judges in South Africa. Did you know that? He's actually on the committee that appoints judges in South Africa.
I did not know that.
Yeah, he is on the committee. There's actually been noises in Parliament about it, because they can see that this is not right. But you can understand why the standard of judges in South Africa is so abysmal. Now, another interesting point is that, do you remember that judge, Maggie Jansen, who had to resign? This was a couple of years ago. And what happened was, she was actually investigating. We were actually in phone contact. She was going to do a live stream, but she chickened out because she had court cases coming up and stuff like that. But basically what happened was that she was seen or had the case where Malema had defrauded the South African Reserve the revenue service. And she was hearing that case, and strange things started happening. There were people in military uniform that came to her house while she was out, broke into her house because the CCTV cameras picked them coming up, going into her house, took all the computers, took all the documents that related to Malema's case, and they disappeared again. And the worst part of all this was that during this time, she made a comment on Facebook, which another EFF member saw as racist. Now, at that time, of course, this was then blown up in the media, and as a result, she had to resign. And, of course, Malema never faced court because they never did anything with it. And there was a lot of money involved. But this is how devious, the injustice of the justice system, if I can put it that way.
I have many things I can tell you about Malema. And one of the weird, creepy things about Malema is Malema's got big, rich supporters. Malema gets big money, and he's not getting it just from blacks and the ANC. He's got big time business supporters. He buys sports cars. He's got all kinds of things. Money flows to him like a river. And this Malema, I must tell you, Malema himself may be a very interesting creation. Malema's history is very interesting. It's like I was under the impression long ago when Malema started appearing on the scene that Malema is some kind of thing that the ANC has created, and they're using him as some kind of attack dog, but they're using him. There's a certain term, I forget the name, the word of the term, but plausible deniability. Plausible deniability. Malema, I saw originally as something that comes from the ANC, because he used to head the ANC Youth League, and he goes out and he does nasty, nasty communist stuff. But then the ANC can stand away from him and they can say, oh, no, you know, this has not got anything to do with us. We don't sanction it. You know, he does his own thing. But if you watch carefully, you'll see he's always protected, and you'll see no government minister, nobody of any kind of power, even the president himself, will ever criticize Julius Malema. And where I saw some nasty things with Julius Malema was years ago with Eugene Terblanche and Robert Mugabe. Julius Malema went and spent lots of time with Robert Mugabe in Zimbabwe. And he spent a lot of time with him, and I would read Zimbabwean stuff where they speak about the meetings that they've had and statements that they make. And one of the things I want to tell you, a theory I have about Julius Malema, is at the time in 2010, just before Eugene Terblanche died, okay, Julius Malema had gone to meet Robert Mugabe, and the two of them came out and they said that land invasions would start in South Africa soon. Other Rhodesians and I had been talking for years before that we think that Robert Mugabe wants to start a race war in South Africa, and Robert Mugabe wants to push the blacks of South Africa, the ANC, forward faster to seize land. So when Malema met with Mugabe, sometime after that, I came across there was a black-run website in Zimbabwe, and they published that this meeting, and they said that in 2 weeks' time, they actually gave a date. They said like in about 2 weeks' time or so, the land invasions in South Africa will begin. And the first thing that happened was suddenly Eugene Terblanche was attacked by a bunch of blacks who beat him to death and killed him. One of those blacks was a Zimbabwean, okay? One of the blacks who murdered him was a Zimbabwean. Now, another thing that I'd come across on the African crisis stuff is that we came to the conclusion that there are times when military personnel from neighboring states come into South Africa as civilians, and then then just another Zimbabwean, and he does something. But he could be a military person on an assignment. Plus, from my early days on African Crisis, when they were doing the land seizures and things, we can talk about this another day. I had personal experience of high-level intelligence people, including spies, from Zimbabwe operating openly in South Africa. And all these blacks who come from neighboring states that are sent by their governments, the ANC knows about it. They go through all the formal processes. The ANC allows it. The ANC knows that their spy system is operating. They're cooperating with each other. So there can be all kinds of weird, weird things going on in South Africa, including farm murders, where there are military personnel from neighboring states assisting the local blacks in killing people. These are things people don't know about. But Malema is very bad news, and he's got very, very wealthy connections.
Yeah.
So he's evil beyond words. Well, I detest that guy.
I understand that Johann Rupert is one of them. Now, like all law forbidding things, once it exists, the government can and will expand on it at any time in the future. And this is a great danger. It's like GST. Once they've got a GST, it started at 10%, and it goes up to 12%, then it goes up to 14%. Who knows where it's going to end? So when you've got a law like this, it can be expanded, it can be changed, but, you know, it's there, it's part of the law. Do you want to talk on that subject?
Yes, that was actually something that my attorney pointed out to me. He said to me, every law he's ever seen, and he's been in the legal profession, I'm not sure if it's 30 years or so, he said every law that he's ever seen, once they start creating lists, they can just come and start adding to it, because it's easier to modify these things. It's just a small change. They add another category or two, you know, like you say, you know, let's say transhumanism or whatever. Mm. And so, you know, they can come and change things. Once they got it, they can just modify it. Yeah. And you never know how weird this thing can get.
Yeah.
So this thing is nasty. This is Soviet Union stuff, really.
Yeah. Now, this is the end of what little is left of free and truthful speech in South Africa, isn't it? I mean, they're just trying to shut up any dissent against the government.
Absolutely. They're trying to shut up anything that tackles that liberal narrative. The liberals and communists are protected parties. As long as you can talk about anything except the truth and whites, you know, they just want to stop the truth getting out. And I think they don't like the fact that whites are active on the internet. They don't like the fact that whites are active on phones. And especially the phones. You know, the government has been targeting phones for a long time. But phones, I must tell you, are maybe more important even than our guns. Because the phones alone, I can't tell you how much that has saved our lives here in South Africa.
Yeah.
If it wasn't for phones and WhatsApp and people forming WhatsApp groups and warning each other, we'd have had crime way worse than it is.
Yeah.
You know, at the end of the day, where we're going is whites have to protect themselves. Why? Because the police aren't doing it. You know, just like you've mentioned with Vicky Momberg, the cops are doing nothing. How am I protected in the suburb I live in? It's because we got neighborhood watches. We got private security companies. Private security companies protect us. They do the patrols. The police are never here. Do you know private security companies catch the criminals? They have gunfights with the criminals. They physically restrain the criminals. And then the police come and they do the paperwork. The only reason the South African police exists is in order to do the paperwork. Okay?
Yeah.
They come at the end after all the stuff has been done.
Yeah,
just like happened in Natal.
With Bekisele as police minister, what can you expect?
But you know, even before him, that the police ministers have been so corrupt. Though I've got a fun remark for you. Americans who look at Becky Sele, the police minister, they make this remark. They say he looks like a 1920s gangster.
You know what I call Becky Sele? I call Becky Sele the Schladi Mutzening of the ANC government. You know Schladi Mutzening is, don't you? He's the guy who said, remember he was going to run for president in 2019? And he was the one who said, fresh air, give me fresh air. Don't you remember that? He said that on, I've got the clip. I might play the clip at the end of this this live stream so people can see it. I mean, this guy's hilarious. He's such a goon. You know, he doesn't even have a matric. And Becky Sele is not much better. He's got a teacher's diploma, which means he can go and teach primary school kids, and yet he's a police minister. Give me a break. Now, let's get back to our subject here. This hate speech bill is basically the end of what little is left of free and truthful speech in South Africa, isn't it? Because they can use it in any which way to shut down something they don't like.
Yes, yes. And the way they're going to do it is through terror. Because once people start doing jail time and people aren't allowed to talk about this and people aren't doing that, it's going to break up everything. This is a serious threat to our ability to function. And it's definitely a threat to getting the truth out. Because the truth, you know, the things about what the government is really up to, what the ANC is really up to. I mean, these people are malicious. They come after the whites. And now you're trying to tell the world about the truth and even to spread it among other South Africans. And now if they start finding loopholes or creating more loopholes in this legislation, then, you know, this is going to finish off websites like mine. I will be out of action, but other people will have to watch what they say. And so people will hardly be able to say anything. You know, you'll have to like keep your personal viewpoints to yourself. The attorneys have told me they personally will not go on phones and they won't go on the internet because they know that this thing will be used against them. So, you know, it's going to be, everyone's going to sit in quiet silence thinking his own thoughts, but never being able to communicate it to other people. And whatever things you say will have to be weak, pathetic things that have very little meaning, you know. So, yeah. So you know, and all it depends is like what weaknesses are there in this thing. Even the Institute of Race Relations, which is also a very old liberal organization in South Africa, the Institute of Race Relations prepared a big submission. They're willing to go and take this to court. So even when this thing goes through, there are some groups like Institute of Race Relations, possibly AfriForum and others, who will still even take the government to court and start fighting things in the High Court.
Yeah.
But the reality is, it's much better to oppose this thing before it becomes law.
Absolutely.
Once it's law, then you're going to battle. And you know, all you need to do is fight it up to the High Court and lose in the Constitutional Court, and you're screwed, man.
Yeah.
You know, the High Courts and up, they start setting precedents. Once they set a precedent, the precedent adds to the law. So, you know, once that thing is signed into existence, that thing is very dangerous.
Yeah.
How it comes out in its final form could be very dangerous.
Yeah. Now, Jan, we've been going for over 90 minutes. Time flies when you're having fun. So, look, I've got a few questions here I'm going to put to you, and then I've got a final question I'll put to you. Garnet has said, Jan, would we be allowed to nail Ramaphosa for his anti-white speech when he said there are no farm murders in South Africa?
I don't think you'd easily be able to tackle that. It would have to depend how he says it. Him just denying it, I understand the angle where you try and say, okay, the law exists. Can we flip it on them? I don't see how you'd be able to use the hate speech law in that case. Maybe you'd have to ask some attorneys. We could ask some attorneys and say, you know, could you say that him denying the existence of farm murders, that that is hate? Maybe. I wouldn't want to bet too much on it, but it is an angle you could maybe explore.
No.
Other people have said maybe we can tackle Malema and so forth on these. But again, it comes back to that prejudice, that cultural thing, that internal rigging. You know, you're going to go against him. You know, you're going to battle. The court can easily say the reasonable man that you know this doesn't fall within the reasonable man thing. So
now, Jan, there's a very very important question we haven't addressed, and that is this law retrospective? In other words, if you said something in 2015, can they actually take action against you for what you said 6 years ago? Or is it from like a clean sheet from the day the bill comes out?
It is a 99% chance it's going to be a clean sheet, so it won't be retroactive. Most laws are not retroactive. So I don't think even they would be able to make it retroactive. But for example, like if you were to, after this... So yes, in a sense, make the most of what free speech you've got left while you got it, because you'll be okay, at least until this thing is law.
And just on that point, Jan, you've got a number of videos, haven't you, which you basically are going to be a threat once this law comes out, because people can still view them. If we can talk about this later, but we could certainly accommodate them somehow in our platform so that they're not lost. I mean, that's something we can talk about at later on. Now, let's just continue here. Alta says, please ask Jan, what does Malema, who can say, kill the farmer, kill the boer? Well, I think we've addressed that subject, haven't we? Okay, Inspector YT, too many black judges are already irrational. In case a judge found a party responsible for destroying goods owned by another, and the judge that the guilty pay 40% of the repair cost. Any comment on that?
I haven't heard of this. Just say this again.
So the
judge who found?
What he's saying, in effect, is that he found the party responsible for destroying goods owned by another, and judged that the guilty party pay 40% of the replacement costs of the goods.
Wow, that does sound kind of weak, eh? I have gone and spent a little bit of time in the courts myself, in the criminal courts, just watching some court cases. And I must tell you that there are strange things there. I personally think that the lower courts, the magistrates' courts, they are very weird, and your best chance is in the high court. But most people cannot even afford to go to the high court. Even the magistrates' court is very expensive. So I personally, you know, the legal system is a nightmare, and the common person, the common average person, you know, he can get nailed, and he won't even know the first thing about how to survive. I can, you know, as it is, even before this twisting of the legal system, the white man, the common person, is already at a disadvantage in a court. This is just going to make it worse. Courts and attorneys are a nightmare. It's not easy stuff. It's very nasty.
I'll give you an example of that, Jan. I covered this morning, South African time, 14 people who've been arrested for protesting at Four Ways in Gauteng back in July. And we actually covered that protest, and we saw the police arresting these people. Half of the people they arrested weren't even part of the protest. They were at the petrol station filling up their cars and went along to see what was going on. They got thrown behind bars for the night. They were arrested, put behind bars for the night. Their first appearance was in court this morning. The police who were involved in the arrest didn't even pitch up. They had no dockets to give to the magistrate. They get away with completely trashing the justice system But if any one of those 14 people had not pitched up at court, they would have been in contempt of court. There's a complete disconnect here between the way the police treat the justice system and those who are arrested are treated. What are your thoughts about that?
Well, I will tell you that the police are so useless. I've never seen the police hunt anything down. And the only time I ever saw anybody in the police doing anything was when there was the odd white policeman around. And I speak like of the suburb I live in, where among the things that you have, which are really worthless, is you have a thing called a community police forum. I think it's a CPF,
yeah.
where the residents can meet with the police, okay, and you can talk. I'll give you some examples. I attended a couple of these a few years ago, and you go there, and actually the only guy who's actually trying in the police, I would notice, is a white guy. It's a white Afrikaans guy mostly who pitches up, and he's trying to be the face of the police, and he's genuinely trying to help the community. Meanwhile, their officers, their commanding officers, the blacks who run the show, they don't really care. But there were weird things that I saw, and this is years ago, and now it must be much worse. For example, I remember once attending a CPF meeting where the police put out the crime stats for my suburb. And they put out the crime stats and they said, oh, well, we only had so many robberies, so many this, so many that. And then the people, the whites who were there were saying, but hold on, you know, that number, that's not right. I had that happen to me and I reported it to you. And why is it not counted on there? And it turned out that people in my neighborhood are reporting stuff to the police, and then when you go and look later, the police database doesn't reflect it. And so the people are saying, but you're not even counting this stuff.
Yeah.
So we saw all kinds of weird things. In the end, I must tell you, the only way that whites are surviving in South Africa is whites are self-organizing everything.
Yeah.
Whites are self-organizing their own groups. Whites are self-organizing their patrols, their security companies, everything. If it wasn't for that, we'd be dead by the hundreds of thousands by now.
Mm. Well, roll on.
That's how important these things are to us.
Yeah.
We would have been wiped out, man. I once caught a black in my backyard. He had a gun. I rigged my own security. And one night I caught a black guy. I didn't physically catch him, but I had rigged a system, and my alarm went off, and I looked out the back window, and there was a black guy with a 9mm pistol standing about 4 meters away from me in the light. Anyway, at the time I didn't have a security company, so I quickly phoned the police and I phoned a security company. I said, there's a guy with a gun. He's in my backyard. Can you please come through? I phoned the police. Then I found a security company that I didn't even belong to. I said, listen, I'm not a customer of yours, but I need help right now. And the security company pitches up first. The police pitch up 30 minutes later.
God.
And, you know, so you know, it's like that Vicky Momberg thing.
Yeah.
The police, let me tell you, the police in South Africa, the only job the police do is they sit in their police stations and they do paperwork. They stamp documents and copy them, take down statements. 99% of police work is paperwork. They got rid of all the really important things. Remember the Brixton crime and robbery squad? They were like the best hunters for murderers in South Africa, a bunch of white guys. They got rid of the Brixton murder and robbery squad long time ago. They got rid of everybody who does detective work. There's almost the South African police probably don't know the first thing about detective work. The only time I ever see the police doing anything is when they decide, probably when some white guy says to them, listen, you need to go and do something, go and set up a roadblock and catch everybody who's got traffic fines. And then all the cars will go and we'll all be in a queue and they'll be checking your driver's license and checking for traffic fines and they'll catch that. And that's all they'll care about.
Yeah.
The South African police are totally useless. you know, if they shut down the South African police tomorrow, we would be quite fine, actually.
There'd probably be less corruption.
I'm telling you, and you know, when it comes to fighting crime, it's whites who are busy fighting crime themselves.
Yeah.
So if we don't look after ourselves, nobody will, hey?
Yeah. Okay, now we got...
And it's the same with the media, you know, etc.
Yeah. We got one final question. This is from Marius. Oh, you've just lost your light. There you go. That's better. Marius says, please ask Jan... How truthful are Neil De Beer and Simon Roche from Saitlanders? I've lost your audio.
Sorry, my mute was on.
Yeah.
Just repeat that. I just heard you mention Simon Roche.
Okay.
Just say it again.
Okay. Marius asks, how trustful are Neil De Beer from UIM and Simon Roche from Saitlanders?
I don't know Neil De Beer. I always had issues about Simon Roche on the basis of his links. I did a bunch of things on my websites because Simon Roche will tell you, if you listen to what Simon Roche says out of his own mouth, he will tell you that he was in the ANC. He will tell you that he had a high position. He'll even tell you there's video footage. In my older stuff, there are things that he tells you where he will say that an interesting thing about him is he even boasts that he had top secret clearance for something. And there's weird things that come from Simon Roche. And he talks about all the people he knows and all the powerful people he knows. I was always suspicious of Simon Roche, and it was like he was running around. To me, it was like he was running around and he was becoming the face of the white right in South Africa and seeing to it that he's the first guy on the block everywhere so that the rest of the white right, nobody else gets to speak their mind. And a thing I particularly disliked about Simon Roche and the Saitlanders, and they've gone overseas, they've gone all over the show, hey, they've been everywhere, I must tell you.
Yeah.
And one thing you will see about them is they will never tell you that anybody else exists except for them. Only they exist. And they will say that only they can save white people. And I have a problem with that.
Right.
If the Saitlanders say that only they can save the white people, that's not true.
Yeah.
That's not true. And what about all the other groups that exist? There
absolutely
are lots of other good groups.
Yeah, absolutely. I speak to a lot of them. Look, I'm going to wrap up this live stream, but before I do, Jan, I just want to thank you so much for coming on and talking to us about this absolutely crazy hate speech bill. Now, just in conclusion, this bill is nothing more than censorship by terror or censorship by intimidation. Do you just want to respond to that and then just make a closing statement and then we'll wrap up the live stream?
Okay. Yeah, because I think that they have come to the conclusion that the only way to really silence white people, that the only thing that really scares white people is jail time. And I think that that's a conclusion they've come to. They've noticed that whites have got this... We are not keen to be sitting in a third world jail in Africa. Okay, we're not keen on that, and they've noticed this weakness, and they are trying to now bring in more things to find reason to put us there, and they know that that is going to be a very big demotivational thing. They know that they're going to scare us by doing that. And that's the real reason. Because why can't you have a hate speech law and the punishment is a fine? Because crimen injuria was mostly fines. In fact, crimen injuria was only fines for decades and decades. Why was there a need to put Vicky Momberg in jail? And I think they found that with whites, the only thing that really scares white people is jail, and therefore that's why they want to go down the criminal route. Plus, It also allows the common person, any person just rushes off. Imagine a malicious person, a malicious white-hating person out there. This is going to give them a chance to run around, to just run around to police stations, lay charges against people. Next thing you know, the police are arresting you. Next thing you know, and you lay these charges, the state pays all your costs. You've got a state prosecutor who's doing your side of the case. The other bloke has got to go and find himself an attorney at tremendous cost, and so forth. You know, this thing is so rigged for attack dogs and malicious people, people who want to go out and silence people. And there are probably people and groups waiting in the corner, waiting there, and they're just waiting for this law to come, and then they're going to be running around, laying charges left, right, and center. And I've already seen there are people out there that do that.
Yeah, so, there are a lot of very vindictive people out there, that's for sure. Now, Jan, just...
Very nasty.
Yeah, just in conclusion, what can people do to try and stop this bill coming into law? What are the options they've got?
Okay, the first thing was that people had to give in their submissions by today, the 1st of October. And by the way, I got good news from my supporters. People were saying that when they were emailing it into the Parliament email address today, that some of them were getting bounces, that the mailbox is full.
Wow.
So people really went to town on this. And what you must remember as well is if you emailed a submission in and it bounced back, most people, you see, there are so many tricks that most people don't know. So let me just point out some things to you. If you sent an email and the email bounced back because their mailbox is full, you just go back and you email it in again. And if they give you any problems with it, just mail it back in and tell them that the reason you are late with your submission is because when you did email it last time, it's especially nice if you keep a copy of the email that bounced back, that delivery status failure. But if you forgot, if you didn't know the legal stuff and you didn't keep it, then just tell them, I emailed it to you at this date and time, more or less, and I'm sending it to you because your mailbox is full and that's not my problem. And what I will do next week anyway, I'm very concerned. Another website called Dear South Africa, Dear South Africa does a bunch of petitions. And one of my supporters told me that when Dear South Africa submitted 5,000 petitions for land seizure without compensation, that the government then said, oh, well, that's just one submission. And I actually want to take that up with my attorney because Dear South Africa has also been gathering email addresses, etc., for this thing. I want to talk to my attorney about that because I'm wondering if people are going to be screwed over when they do petitions, etc., etc. Because I really think in terms of – so what I'm saying is please do your submission. If you haven't done it, please do it. And if it bounced, just do it again. Don't let them get away with it. Next thing is we need to fight all the court battles that we can. And all these other groups have got advocates, etc. around. I actually think we should try and get as many attorneys involved in this as possible and people to actually watch what is going on in that parliamentary group, because one of the things we can still do is you can take the government to court. You can sue people. And so if you've got attorneys who are willing to do things, we can still sue them even afterwards. Yeah. And if there are any things they're doing in their processes where they are screwing us, we should make noise about it. The one thing you can always do, and I'm going to be still doing this, I've still got a bunch of small videos and video clips that I want to put out, is that even after this deadline, we must spread the news about this around the world. And we must inform people. I personally have already sent emails to at least 20 embassies. And that's another thing you can do. You can contact any government and tell them about this thing. There's nothing stopping you with this. I won't go into the details about why you can do this now, but you have every right. You can write to the embassy of any government and tell them about this thing. So that remember, there are some processes that are outside of South Africa. So the ANC and the government can screw us over, but remember, we can tell other people who are watching them, and make no mistake, even the Western world does watch what's going on. So go beyond the South African government after today. After you've done your submissions, go beyond it. Go to common people. Go to anybody. And like I say, even don't be afraid. Write a freaking email to an embassy of another country and say to them, listen, this nasty thing is coming in South Africa. We're going to have no free speech. It's a violation of the Constitution. Write it. Send it. Hmm. You can't get into trouble for it. I've done this for years, and I've still got another 5 or 6 that I'm going to do tomorrow. So make noise. If we are quiet, that's how these bastards get away with it. Yeah. And as you know, the media does nothing. The mass media does nothing. If we don't make noise, nobody's going to make noise for us.
Right. Okay. Jan, thank you so much for coming on tonight. And so many people are saying we've got to have Jan back on, and we will have Jan back on. And
awesome.
Knut Holger from Scandinavia says, hey, Jan Lamprecht, love from Scandinavia. Thank you so much for your work. So you've got fans all over the world. Oh, we've lost Jan again. The audio's off.
It's Jan pressing the mute button again. Scott, I can't thank you. I can't thank you enough for having me on your show. And actually, a number of people have said to me, quite a lot of people have said to me that I must get on your show. And I said to them, I just don't know how to contact this guy. And I want to tell you, Scott, you are very popular in South Africa. You are very popular. Lots of Afrikaans people absolutely love the work you do. So it's so awesome. And you're in Australia. Ah, we must stick together.
Absolutely.
This is the only way. Whites everywhere, yeah, are screwed. Yeah. And there's only one answer, and that's stick together.
Absolutely.
Stick together, make lots of noise.
we've got a huge Loving Life family in South Africa, and it's a great family. I've got a great team of people who work with me, and our Loving Life community is fabulous. You know, we had to leave YouTube because of censorship, and we've now migrated completely to lovinglifetv.com. Just last month, we had over 16 million pages viewed on lovinglifetv.com. Now, in 2 years, I had 25 million views on YouTube. In 2 years, 16 million in 1 month on lovinglifetv.com. Do you know what our hidden little trick is? We've got people who register. So people watching, please register on lovinglifetv.com. And we send out an email every day to all those people giving updates on live streams like this one here. And we have live streams every night at 8 p.m. Johannesburg time. I've actually got 2 live streams tomorrow. I've got one at 8 p.m. and I've got one in the morning, starts at about 8 a.m. So that's going to be in about 10 hours from now. We're going to be covering protests in Cape Town, Johannesburg, Pretoria, all over South Africa. Live on the ground. So if you want to find out what's going on in South Africa, register on lovinglifetv.com. Become involved. And don't forget to check out our forums. We've got fabulous forums that are looked after by Nat Quinn. And of course, this is a hats off to Marlena, who looks after our live streams, and she does an amazing job there. We've got a great team, absolutely great team. And of course, Rudy, who looks after the website and stuff like that. So here's a shout out to everybody involved with Loving Life. You're a huge part of the family. We've even got a resident pastor. Can you believe that, John? We have a Sunday service every Sunday that comes out. And fabulous. This guy is an absolute dynamo. Absolute dynamo. Okay.
Excellent.
I'm going to wrap this up. Thanks, Jan. Take care, and I'll get Marlena to have a chat to you so we can get you back on again, perhaps later this month.
It'll be wonderful. Thank you so much. It's been an honor to be on your show. You're doing excellent work for South Africa. Fantastic.
Okay. Thanks, Jan. Take care. Bye for now.
Take care. Bye.
All right, guys. That was Jan Lamprecht. It's been an absolute pleasure chatting to him. And, you know, I know the challenges he's facing when it comes to doing what he does. Because when you speak the truth, the mainstream media, the fake news, do not like it. And, you know, I've had comments that other South African media have said about Loving Life TV in the past. And that's good. It means we're getting under their skin. Doesn't worry me at all. I will leave the side chat open for a few minutes so you can say your goodbyes. And if you haven't registered, please do. Because as I said, you'll be a beneficiary of a daily email. And the stuff that we have up there will really give you a completely new independent insight on what's not just happening in South Africa, but around the world. And in particular, this absolute scam involving a certain virus. Well, I'm going to leave it at that. All right, guys, take care and see you tomorrow morning on our live stream then. Bye for now. Okay, guys, now what I'm going to show you is that promised clip of Shladi Motsoeneng with Fresh Air. Here we go. Are you all set to go? Here we go. This is the Bekesele of the ANC ministry. I call him Shladi Motsoeneng.
Fresh Air. We need fresh air.
Now, that's the mentality of Bekesele, as far as I'm concerned. I'm going to go out with one final piece of music that I play quite often, and that is Heer Bleek Boer. I think it's quite relevant to tonight's
meer as 61,000 live stream. Ons voorvaders het op die grens vir ons gesterwe sodat ons vry kan wees. Die is my land, die is my reg, hier is ek boer. Stop is ek gemaakt en sal ek terugkeer. Die Bybel is die woord waaruit ek leer, soos die grond op die aarde. Hier bly ek boer. Soos diep in die nacht sal die vijand kom, maar hier bly ek staan en ek draai nie om. Want jy maak my nie bang nie, hier bly ek boer.
Die is my land waarvoor ek sal ver, die is my bloed, my sweet, my reg. Die is die plek waar my voorvaders leef, die is my land oor wat ek jou sê.
In die somer wat vreugde bring, my opa wat maniekie roek ons sing, soos hy stap deur die lande, hier was hy boer. My wortels leeg diep in die grond geplant, my seun soos my pa los ek vir jou die land, en jy hoef nie te vrees nie, hier sal jy boer.
Die is my land waarvoor ek sal ver, die is my bloed, my sweet, my reg. Die is die plek waar my voorvaders leef, die is my land voor wat ek jou sê. Wat my mense voer, hier bly ek.
sal kom, die lief 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 sal kom.
My websites, historyreview.com, africancrisis.info, and white-shop.biz. This is my attempt to try and do some Jew-free trading and experimenting with the next level of stuff. So, thank you very much for listening. We'll be chatting again soon. Take care of yourselves.